You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including rent stabilization in Fortuna, less water for Klamath Basin farmers, and a controversy over ammo sales in Curry County. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And Jane, you covered a new rent stabilization ordinance that passed in Fortuna this week. Why did this topic come up there?
Basically because residents brought it up. People had raised concerns about fears they would potentially become homeless because their rent was too high, and they said it kept being increased. A lot of mobile home park residents there are older or on fixed incomes. There were some city documents showing that rent at one of these parks, the Royal Crest Mobile Estates, the rent had risen 96% from 2013 to 2025 and actually exceeded inflation in most of those years. So basically, residents have been bringing up concerns. There was a lot of public comment. The city's been working on this for a while and trying to figure out what to do with they have four mobile home parks with almost 300 spaces. They were trying to figure out a process for that.
And this covers only mobile home parks.
Yes.
Well, how does the new ordinance work?
There are a lot of different things in there. One of them is a ban on rent increases when a home is sold, so you can't then just jack up the rent. There's an annual 5% cap on rent increases, which is tied to the Consumer Price Index, which tracks inflation. And then there's also they implemented a process for park owners to pass on the cost of any capital improvements to residents, but they first have to get preliminary approval from a hearing officer who is a licensed attorney that's appointed by the city manager. So you can't just pass those costs straight on to residents. So there's some other things in there too in that ordinance. There's a few different things that they're trying to hit, and that ordinance takes effect immediately this week.
And so what did the people think?
Some people literally applauded when the city council approved this ordinance.
You don't often see that.
No, literal applause in the city council chambers. And then some residents said they liked parts of it. They were happy that the city council was focusing on this problem and taking some time to look at it, but they still had some concerns with various parts of it. So, for example, one resident spoke during public comment and said he was still worried about that cost of capital improvements being passed down to tenants. So even though there's a 5% cap on the rent increase, he worried about people still being unable to afford those additional costs from capital improvements. There was also some things that residents had wanted to be in the ordinance that were not. So the residents had wanted for the mobile home park tenants to have to approve those capital improvements by a vote. But the city manager, when I talked to her, said that would be illegal. So that's not in the new ordinance. Residents had also requested proportional rent reductions when park services were reduced. The ordinance doesn't include that either. It's been flagged for future policy discussions, but was not added now. So there were some pros and cons, as the people saw it, as the residents said. And one city councilor voted against the ordinance, passed 4-1, but it was not unanimous. He had some concerns about free market and free enterprise concerns. And then, of course, there's the park owners themselves. And in a letter to city officials, some of them were protesting these changes. They say that they deserve a fair return on their investments, for example, by maybe increasing rent when a home is sold. They say that these increased rents are needed because they themselves, as the park owners, have skyrocketing expenses in recent years. One of them that I mentioned, Royal Crest, said they can't recall a single resident who's ever been evicted for non-payment during the past 5 years. They say that their management really works with residents who aren't able to pay their rent, and they're helping them avoid eviction and avoid the loss of their home. So it seems the park owners were not too thrilled with the changes.
Okay, thank you, Jane. Roman, you brought us this year's water allocations for farmers in the Klamath Basin. Can you tell us where the water comes from and what farmers are getting this year?
Yeah, so it's called the Klamath Project, which is basically the irrigation for all of the farmers in the Klamath Basin. So the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, which oversees water management in the western U.S., they manage the reservoirs in that basin, including Upper Klamath Lake. And so they decide every time about this time of year how much water they're going to allocate to different things in the project, like irrigation. A certain amount has to be kept in the lake to protect endangered suckers, and then a certain amount also has to be released down the Klamath River to help salmon. And then there's also some other small things too. But basically, whatever is left goes to farmers for irrigation. This year, they are allocating less water than last year, about 221,000 acre feet. And that's a weird number. So to give people an idea of how much that is, an Olympic-sized swimming pool is about 2 to 3 acre feet. So,
nearly 100 of those or so?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So that's basically a And also, it's also a little over half of what farmers will actually need this year. In 2025, they had allocated 330,000 acre feet.
So why is the Bureau of Reclamation allocating less water this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's raining right now. We just had a thunderstorm yesterday. But, you know, if you've been here over the winter, it's been pretty dry. In fact, snowpack levels across Oregon are really, really low. In the Klamath Basin, there's only about 8% as much snow as there should be on average this time of year. And then, the last time there was this little snow was in 2015. So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
The snow kind of acts like a sponge, basically. It stores water over the winter and then slowly releases it over the summer. So you want a lot of snow. And without that snow, there's going to be a lot less water for farmers to rely on throughout the entire growing season. Plus, Klamath County is starting to head into drought conditions. About a third of the county is currently in a drought, and the rest is in kind of what's called pre-drought conditions right now. So the Bureau is kind of worried about a dry summer.
So last year, farmers got enough water to meet demand, but hasn't it been much worse for them just before that?
Yeah. I mean, this year isn't necessarily like a nightmare situation for farmers. Starting in 2020, there was an extreme drought in the basin and a lot of this area that lasted through 2023. And farmers during that time got much less water than they did this year. In 2021, they got no water at all. There was actually a standoff where some farmers threatened to break into the federal facilities and turn on the water themselves. And actually, in 2001, during another drought, farmers did just that. They broke in the facilities and turned on the water. So it's a pretty tense situation.
Because it's their livelihood,
It is
right?
their livelihood. Yeah. They need that water to grow the crops. You can't do much else without it.
Well, how are farmers responding to this announcement?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not happy. We haven't heard threats of a standoff yet, but, you know, they sort of expected this with how bad the winter was precipitation-wise. They also critiqued the current set of regulations the Bureau is using, saying they're unworkable. The Bureau had created these new regulations for managing water in the basin just a few years ago, and farmers called it rushed. They say the Bureau has acknowledged that, and they're looking at reworking them, so they're hoping that that could change, but I'm not really sure what those changes are going to be or how that's going to give more water to farmers when you have these other things to take care of. This year, the Bureau also announced $19 million in drought relief funding, and a lot of that money will go towards essentially paying farmers not to use their land this year. So they say they expect to need to do that for about 40,000 acres, which is about a sixth of the total amount of farmland in the project. There also could be more water allocated in the future if conditions change. Maybe
so
if we
get had
more
a wet
of this
summer,
rain,
or,
something like that, but we're not sure yet.
Well, thank you, Roman. Justin, you reported on more conflicts between the Curry County Board of Commissioners and the Sheriff's Office there. Can you tell us what that was all about?
Yeah, and I'll kind of get into the history between these agencies a bit later. But most recently, the board accused Sheriff John Ward of selling $10,000 worth of county ammunition to officers and at least one community member. So that ammo was sold at a discounted government rate, according to commissioners. It occurred 6 years ago, so at the beginning of COVID, when I guess ammo was pretty hard to get. And the county's counsel, their attorney says these sales may violate state law, especially those against using a public position for financial gain. He said this issue was brought up to the board by a former commissioner who was also a reserve deputy with the sheriff's department. While he was moving, I guess, he found some of this ammo that he had purchased from the sheriff's department, and that got him thinking. I guess he had sort of issues with it when he first purchased the ammo, but he brought this to the attention of the county, and the county provided documents to the press and others showing a sheriff's invoice for the ammunition and then personal checks written out to the department to kind of prove that the sheriff's office was actually selling this ammo.
And what does Sheriff John Ward have to say about all this?
So he denied any wrongdoing and said these allegations were politically and personally motivated. So commissioners aren't getting along with him. He said that what happened was that an ammo supplier had a flyer for an ammunition sale, which the sheriff's office had. They had that flyer, and they provided that to deputies and reserve deputies to see if they wanted to purchase ammo through the supplier for training purposes. He said no county funds were used. And looking at the invoice, it does look like the sheriff's department recouped the money with those individual orders. Those matched up, besides a $500 shipping fee, which the county brings up. So that was paid for by the county. The county's attorney said, it doesn't really matter that the sheriff's department recouped these funds. The department originally used county funds to buy the ammo. And so it's irrelevant if that was offset by these individual orders. The sheriff also said that, many agencies around the country provide monthly ammo for training for deputies and reserves. But in Curry County, they can't afford that. They're struggling financially, and so that's why they opened up this deal. The county's attorney says the county actually does buy all practice ammunition for the sheriff's office, and that this ammunition was not used for training. It was used for personal use.
And you mentioned that commissioners and the sheriffs have been at loggerheads recently. Can you run down what those disagreements are?
Yeah, there's been an ongoing battle between these departments, mostly around disagreements, kind of over authority. What can a county tell the sheriff to do? Also funding. Law enforcement levies keep failing in Curry County, and the sheriff's office is struggling. Commissioners actually sued the sheriff's office last year after Sheriff Ward refused to provide records to the county and attend board meetings and hand over county car keys, lots of things. The judge sided with the county on most points in that lawsuit, although the judge said that the county can't require Ward to attend board meetings and that the county needs to be a bit more specific about what documents they're requesting. But county council said since that decision, Ward isn't complying with the judge's order. The sheriff hasn't provided documents requested, especially for this ammo sale most recently. The county has actually used a third-party investigator to find these records. So there's this ongoing antagonism still there between the commissioners and the sheriff's department, and we'll be following it.
Yeah, I was going to say that's something I'm sure we'll have more on as more twists and turns develop there. And that's it for the debrief this week. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line, also at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or your favorite podcast platform.